You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm part of a sisterhood like no other. A piece of a puzzle I can barely comprehend. My life is someone else's experiment. My name is Alison Hendricks. It's Cassima Niehaus.
It's Rachel Duncan.
Alex Gallagher.
Heather French.
Sarah Manning. And I'm one of a kind.
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your many toys. I'm not just one.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is our Orphan Black clone cast version of BoobTube, and my name is Heather. I am joined by my almost clone sister, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hey, everybody.
I was trying to do the sestera, and I was like, wait, my mouth is too dry to do sestera and do the things. I stumbled
you
there
tried
a little bit.
Gold star.
We're back here for season 3 of Orphan Black, but before we get into that, Alex, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you too. It's been a year. This has officially been the longest relationship I've been in. Congratulations.
For those of you who have been listening to us for the last year, thank you. Thank you so very much. For those of you that haven't, please go over to iTunes and start following Sci-Fi for Chicks, or you can also go on the podcast platform of your choice. This episode marks a year that Alex and I have been podcasting partners. Orphan Black Season 2 was our first regular show, and we made it a whole year. I am so excited. This is fabulous.
No. Wow. I feel like we should have wine with this.
Well, I wish I'd thought of that. It's late enough. I could be. For those of you that also don't know, Alex is in Poland. She's 7 hours in the future. So usually by the time we start recording, I'm like, it's still too early for me to have anything. I'll just have some water or a Coke.
Well, in this case, let's make a toast with water. Because that's what we have. To another year.
To a happy year. I do want to do a little shout out. This is kind of like a back in the past shout out. The whole reason that I got the idea for Sci-Fi for Chicks and for Alex and I doing a podcast like this was because of one that I used to listen to way back in the day when Lost was on. Ha ha! I got it in again, Alex. I listened to like 5 different Lost podcasts, and there was one called The Lost Initiative that was these two women. It was Kim in Toronto and Amy, I think she ended up in Oklahoma City. And the fact that these two women were podcasting their view of the show and that they were in different countries and different time zones is where I was like, you know, I think this could actually work. Alex and I can do this. There's a few more time zones than Amy and Kim had, but I think it could really work out. And it's been a lot of fun. So I am really excited that we made it a year. And in that year, for those of you that don't know, or those of you that do and need a reminding, we have done a Sleepy Hollow podcast, a Gotham podcast, which we will be finishing up when Gotham is finishing here. We started iZombie. Alex and I also have a few ideas in the works for what happens when summer comes around and the shows that we're podcasting on aren't on. So,
yeah, we got together, became partners in crimes, and now there is no hope for you guys. You will be listening to us until kingdom come. Yes.
Make sure you do go over to iTunes and subscribe to us. You can also follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. I promise we're going to get better at following and liking and interacting and such. It's just been crazy, but we're definitely going to get better on that because, you know, we're seeing some good responses out there. And one of those responses, before we get into the actual episode of Orphan Black here, I want to say is from this particular person who we just love and adore, and he has now moved up to a opening credits title character. We have that's Mr. Kristen Brune at The Brune on Twitter. Donnie is now a main character.
Yay! I know. I've been so thrilled when I saw his name because I only watch opening credits at the beginning of the show and at the end because, you know, I'm always looking for the changes, you know, to see if at all anything changed. And when I saw his name, I was like, yes, yes, we love you so much. And you got the promotion you so deserved. So congratulations.
And I think it's great too, because it means that I think we're going to have some really more great play with him in the show, and not just this incidental, occasional, really great moment. I think we're going to have some really fun stuff, and that'll
something
be a good step up for him and Allison.
Yeah.
And now, an Orphan Black insider.
In season 3, the sisters are all in very separate worlds, and they know they are stronger together, so it's this journey to find each other again.
God, we're so different, all of us.
You know, and they've changed each other. So even if they are separate physically, there's a stronger bond than ever before because they've been through so much and they know so much about each other. They're different because of having met each other. Sarah was so selfish when we first met her.
Your life is always more important than mine.
She's really changed in terms of caring about her sisters. She's weirdly become the ringleader, even though she's totally not that person.
You don't own us.
Allison and Donnie, they're sort of in this lovely, happy place as a team because they've kind of gone through this big thing of burying Dr. Leakey's body together, which is always the way that couples kind of find each other again.
I have never been more attracted to you than I am right now.
The last time we saw Cosima, she had sort of had this out-of-body experience where we weren't sure if she was alive or dead, and it's a neat place to jump off from for somebody who sees things practically and logically. So Helena is sort of being carted off by what seemed like a military operation of some kind. She's unsure of where she is and totally terrified. Rachel had a pencil stabbed in her eye. Is she alive?
Okay, we are several minutes into this. Let's go ahead and get into the actual episode. We are here to talk about Orphan Black, Season 3, Episode 1, The Weight of This Combination. Now, Alex, something else that holds true from last season is, where did this quote come from? We had Darwin the first season, last season with Sir Francis Bacon. This is actually from Eisenhower's farewell address when he was leaving the presidency. And he was had this quote, which I thought was really kind of cool. It's in, let's see, where do I have it here? In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process. So it's the whole thinking and military complex and industrial taking over. And, you know, look into Ike's address if you want to know a little bit more about why they named it this. We're naming it The One Without the Safe Word.
Because we know what's important. Nobody cares about the Eisenhower quote. We care about the safe words. Which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, always play safe, sane, and consensual. I'm just saying.
Okay, let's go ahead and get into this episode. First, I'm going to do the bullet points.
One day, they kill you all.
Sarah pursues the missing Helena, who is held in a faraway compound. Sarah must use her wiles and acting chops to deter topside investigator who threatens the Lita sisters' lives. Meanwhile, Cosima appears to be rebounding from her illness, while Allison and Donnie face a newfound financial woes. But when the menace of Castor rears its head once more, Sarah and her entire family must come together to survive.
Holy doodle, here we go.
3, 2, 1.
The episode started so wonderfully with this 50s Leave It to Beaver happy little backyard birthday party for Helena and her sestras. Oh, we got to talk about this.
Oh, it was adorable. Yes, I was a little confused when I saw it, because that's not where we left off. Is this another show where I will have to, you know, suffer through flashbacks of what happened in the months leading up to this? No! It was so surreal that at some point during that scene I thought, yeah, $5 says it's a hallucination, or a dream, or both.
I was going, did the writers of Orphan Black, did they have lunch with the writers of Sleepy Hollow? Because that's kind of how Sleepy Hollow started last season.
I know, this whole alternate universe.
I loved how everybody acted. Kira in her little Tinkerbell fairy costume, and Helena all bright and shiny, and Allison with the cupcakes, and Fee. Did you see how Fee was dressed in like that golf sweater kind of thing? And barbecuing the ox liver, and it was just and then Cosima comes in. With her basket, you know, dressed. That was the one that confused me. Because if you look it up on IMDb, the picture that they have for this episode is Cosima in this Eastern European costume, you know, dance costume. And I'm like, what? How does this relate at all to everything that I've seen in the previews? And then when she walks in with this basket of all these Eastern European goodies that just, looks so delicious. I'm like, oh, I get it. This really is a hallucination thing. That was just, and when she said also, this is such a Helena way to think of it. I'm way better thanks to science.
Thanks to science. Yes. Deadline just, oh my God. I have no words for that line. That line won me over. If I needed winning over. But then of course, it didn't last long after that. Cause it couldn't. Because why would Helena get nice things? We are back to my problem with this character. Like, Helena doesn't get nice things. She does, however, get, imaginary scorpions. Thank God it wasn't a spider or I wouldn't be able to watch her scenes.
Well, when it got dark in her nice, pretty little, happy little backyard life, and then this scorpion crawled out of her belly, I'm like, oh, this is, first off, poor Tatiana. Because, she has this scorpion that's crawling up here. And I'm like, oh, Tat, you poor thing. When it then suddenly flashes and she's in that box and the scorpion's there, I had such a feeling of dread. Like, the military is throwing these scorpions in with her to hasn't this girl been through enough?
Yeah.
When it started talking to her, I'm like, okay. Again, am I back in Sleepy Hollow? What is going on here? This is this trip. And the way it talked to her, she's seen the scorpion before.
I'm pretty sure that she was, quote unquote, being tested by the guys that threw her at the clones at the beginning of season one. That's pretty much, a given. So this was like she was getting an old friend back, which isn't good, because what Helena needs is not an imaginary scorpion. She needs stability. And Jesse, clearly, obviously. Shiny happy place. Which, by the way, did you notice how Helena also has a shiny happy place? Minus a little more, realistic and less PG-13. But it says a lot that we both have a shiny happy place.
Which, okay, I'm going to say, now I'm a little upset. Where was Jesse in her shiny happy place backyard barbecue?
You know where he was? He was still shooting Suits. Because there was a scheduling problem. And that's the answer I'm going with, because otherwise, you're right. It was Jesse who should be, grilling up barbecue or something in that.
Maybe he was inside the house getting the baby's nursery.
Ready.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do that. He was inside the house getting that.
He fixed it.
And maybe this will open up the door. Writers. Well, okay, the season that you've already done this. Maybe you can open up the door that she could have another shiny happy place moment when she's going through all this bad stuff and actually have a Jesse one. And so we can get Jesse back because we want hashtag shiny happy place back.
Yes, we do. This is my, goal for every season of Orphan Black from now on to eternity. At least one Jesse appearance.
Well, and we're already happy because Donnie is now, opening credits. So we already have one of our guys there that has a little bump. We need Jesse back.
Yeah.
Because Jesse and Helena are just precious.
Yeah. They are adorable. And I feel like Helena will need a shiny happy place later on. Because, yes, she managed, well, she didn't, but she got out of the box. They were holding her in. But I feel like it's out from a fire onto a frying pan. Because I don't think it's over for Other her. Way. What?
Out of the frying pan and into the fire.
I don't know with Helena. Because I would say it's either way. It's not very good.
I'm wondering why a scorpion. Because obviously, like we said, she's had this relationship with the scorpion before. And the scorpion is telling her that, you know, just imagine that you're in a box, in a box, in a box kind of a thing. This is obviously a coping mechanism that Helena's had for quite a while, you know, because, and I don't even know if it was the scorpion that was, because she was freaked out until the scorpion started talking to her. So I don't know if she had other creatures that did it. Maybe it's the same voice or something, but obviously she's had this box in a box in a box coping mechanism before.
And I think it's a very good analogy, because she was literally in a box, but once she gets out of the box, there's still the bigger box, like, say, her cell, and then the bigger box, the building she's being held in, and then yet another bigger box, which would be the, I don't know, the fence around. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure she will be getting out from one box after another, until she's back with her sisters.
Well, and I like it too, because it does, it's like you're in a box, in a box, in a box, so it's trapped, and you get out of one, it's like you still constantly have this goal. Okay, I've made it, like you've accomplished something, I've made it out of this box. Now I have to get out of that. So it's this process thing for her, that you have accomplished something, but you're still have a ways to go. So it's an interesting way to think of it. And because that's one of the things I always think about. It's like sometimes there's a couple jobs I've had where you would go through the whole day and do something, you'd accomplish these really great things, and then the next morning you're right back to where you started from again. And it didn't seem like you were making any headway. And it's nice to have that where you can actually say, I've done this, I've accomplished this, even though I still have all of this ahead of me. I can say I've done all this. And that's almost what that box in a box, I think, is doing for her. It's letting her know she's accomplished something, even though she still has a long way to go.
Yeah. And I think it will keep her from breaking. Because my biggest fear at the end of the last season was that if the writers keep piling stuff up for Helena, and it's nothing but pain and misery for her, no matter how strong she is, no matter how strong she starts out, she's going to break. And she's already pretty damaged. So that was my biggest fear as far as season 3 goes, that they will break her and there will be no fixing her. Or at least no way of putting her back to the slightly unstable, psychopathic, almost killer that we came to love. And this scorpion, imaginary friend, seems to be, you know, that border of keeping Helena on the right side of sane and whole. So I hope she keeps him, because I like my Helena not completely broken. So, you know,
yes,
let's keep her relatively, you know, sane-ish. You know, up to Helena standards.
She needs that too, because when she was assassin clone and had no connection, she just only had purpose and really no connections to anybody, I think it was easier for her to take blows and to be pushed down, because her whole purpose was to be assassin clone, and she had that. But now she's vulnerable because she has her sestras.
And her babies.
And she has connections. And she has these emotional connections, these family connections that she kind of always knew she wanted, but didn't know how badly she wanted them. I think it was like when she was assassin clone, just kind of this idea of a family.
Yeah.
But now she has it. And she really has it, because let's go ahead and start transitioning into Sarah. Sarah is really something I love in this episode, is once she finds out that Helena is gone, when that first Scarface caster clone tells her, count your sisters, and she realizes Helena's is gone. This is not the Sarah of early last season, where she's still kind of like, that's Helena. She's assassin clone. I tried to kill her. This, I'm scared of her. She is really saying, I have to get my sister. How dare anybody take my sister away? And it's not because she doesn't love the other sisters, but this is her sister. This is her family. She has embraced Helena as family.
Yeah. It really showed, this episode, more than anything else before, showed how much Sarah changed and evolved, mm-hmm. so to speak. Because I really, when she said to S, you're not my family, Helena is my family, and Allison is my family, and you know, Cosima, I believed her. Because she believed what she was saying. This is no longer the Sarah who would leave Helena in the car while she pursued, you know, the lead that she had, leaving Helena to wander off and get in trouble. And Jesse. But mostly get in trouble. And I feel that Sarah from 301 would not leave Helena in the car. She would take her with her. She would, you know, be the sister that Helena wanted. And I felt like, wow, okay, Sarah just won me over. Again, because she needed after some of the season two stuff.
Well, in last season, it seemed like she was trying to, or starting to, get closer to Mrs. S. And was understanding what Mrs. S was doing. And when S got totally beat up by Juan Caster clone, you know, I'm Juan of them. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to call you Juan. Because you got the mustache. And
the porn mustache, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. When she, and she got throttled by him. I mean, he is, if he's on the outside, I'm scared. I'm really scared. Because if that's a clone, Caster clone that's on the outside and wandering in society, this is not good. When you hear that kind of overdub of, you know, when S is laying on the floor and kind of all woozy, you can hear Sarah and Fee like, oh my God, Mrs., you know, S, come back to me. And like, she's really worried about S. But the minute that S tells her that she made a wartime decision, that this was Paul's one demand, no one else knew, and I was trying to get you back and trying to get Kira, I made this decision. Yeah, you're right. When Sarah just lays back into her and it's like, this is not your place. This is not your right. This is my sister, my family. That's the first time I think I've really seen S scared. You know, when Sarah's leaving and she's like, don't turn your back on me. It wasn't this command of don't turn your back on me. It was this pleading. Yeah. Don't leave me. I was doing this for you.
Because just as I believed Sarah when she said that Helena is her family and not S, I do believe that S saw that legitimate threat. It was the first time where, because of her choices, because of what S decided to do, she would lose the one person that she truly, really cared about. And that's Sarah. Mm-hmm. And with Sarah goes Kira. And now poor Fee is stuck in the middle. Like he said, you know, he's stuck with an apple in the middle. So I love that.
I love that line when S said, go after her, you know, don't let her make it worse. And he's like, she's going to make it worse. Come on, we know.
Yeah. How long have you known Sarah? it really hit me, because while Fee is still part of the clone club, you know. And by the way, all those green phones made me giggle all the way through.
Well, that's what we had last season, and he changed. And I like when he even makes a comment, we need to get new clone phones, because now Delphine has that phone number. So we got it. So I'm like, okay, what color are we going to now? We had pink first season, green last season. We need a new color.
Yeah. But Fee is still very much part of the clone club. But now that, after this, I don't think Sarah, and by extension Fee and all the other clones, will trust S again. S is right now on the complete outside, and whatever she does, she might have good intentions, but she will not be in the loop. I don't think they will be keeping her up to date with what's going on.
No, I don't think so either. She's really going to have to do a lot to earn back even a modicum of trust.
Exactly.
In the Clone Club. It's really going to take a lot. And I have a feeling she's going to be doing it because she's going to be our main Clone Club extension, whatever, connection to Paul, who they kept using his last name. And I had totally forgotten what Paul's last name was. So when they were Dearden or something like that, I'm like,
Paul, come on, let's not complicate it. We already remember Dylan Bruce. Let's not get too many names in.
I was glad by the end of the episode somebody did actually say Paul Dearden. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. Just like, who's Dearden?
I need
to go back and watch season two again.
Paul, Dylan Bruce, those are the two names that I'm willing to give one character, especially a character who wasn't even in the episode. Come on.
No kidding. Let's get back to Sarah, though, some more, because we're talking about how, you know, she's really stepped it up. She's really got this connection. She, you know, even says, I only trust my sister. And, of course, names Fee as part of that in his sister's thing. She really is, that is the connection. Oh, did you also see how she asked S, like, who was involved and who knew? And she did bring up Cal. Did Cal know? And S is like, no. So, helping Sarah know that Cal is not part of whatever S is doing and planning. I like that.
I thought you would. I'm
smiling right now.
And she's blushing, FYI. She is. No.
So we have Delphine, who from the beginning is, you know, really trying to get Sarah to come in and I have to also say, I love it when Delphine walks in and he's like, Delphine, God, she looks good.
And she does. She does. Come on, Heather, I have to say, I am really digging Delphine in straight hair. Because she looked so much like Rachel. I mean, she spent a lot of this episode saying that she's the new Rachel. And she looked the part. She looked more put together. She looked more cold and composed. Mm-hmm. For a second there, I thought they changed the character completely. But no, this is the same actress doing the same character as we've seen with Cosima. But the way she appeared, like, she is the new Rachel. And I am so, so loving her.
Yeah. And I mean, I can see where she's stepping in, and later on in the... Well, I'll talk about that when we get to it. She comes up to Sarah and tells her, you know, she has to come, and they go and see Scarface clone so that they can talk, and Scarface clone is talking about, you know, you're a legend, Sarah Manning, you're the maid of the good stuff. I loved that line. I thought that was very intriguing, that you're maid of the good stuff, because one of the questions that I had that hopefully we're going to get to do that Science of Orphan Black podcast, is if you're a clone, you're cloned from something. You're not just, poof, made out of thin air. So there has to be an original that they're cloned from.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the original is dead, if the original is now an old woman, if the original is whatever, but I'm wondering if Sarah, and by extension Helena, are products of the original. I mean, like, really products, like first drafts or original children of or something, because they're, you know, it's how different Sarah is. And also Helena, because Helena's her mirror, since they're twins.
Well, some of the original things they address in the preview for the next episode, but I like that it looks like we're going to get the answers to the questions we had back in season two. Like, I remember us wondering how did that work, you know? Who's the original? Is Sarah the original? Or you know, how does that work? So I'm really looking forward to getting some answers, because you know me, I like it when the writers give me what I want. Go on. I'm easy like that.
She does.
So, yes, this was a good line, because it made me squee, and say to myself, yes, yes, they got my medal. I'm getting my answers. Which probably happened.
It shows that they're progressing that too, because yeah, that is something that has been kind of at the back of my mind since season one. If you're a clone, you're cloned from something. It's not, you know, even on Harry Potter, you can't make something from nothing. There has to be something that you make from. So it's like, this is part and parcel of what you need to do. So when they're bringing that up, that it does again make Sarah, and as I said, by extension, Helena, special. And I think that was a good thing for Sarah, who I love too, that when she does finally acquiesce to play Rachel Duncan. And I love that she plays Rachel Duncan while Allison then is going to play Sarah Manning. Because at first I'm like, well, why can't Sarah play Sarah and Allison play Rachel? But with what happened later, I can't. In a way, I could see Allison doing it, but it wouldn't have the same effect. But when she finally decides that she has to play Rachel, it's because she's going to make sure that she gets Helena. It's all for Helena. It's not for Dyad. It's not for Delphine. It's not for any of these other purposes. It's totally, they're going to have the leverage to help me get my sister back. And that's when she seemed to embrace it. You know, Rachel Duncan, uber bitch. As she gets ready. And Fee does this fabulous makeover. Fee is totally right, too. She should not have worn black. The white is what she needed to wear.
But for a second there, I was a little confused because I was convinced that Sarah played Rachel in the past. She already did pretend to be Rachel, and I got confused as to why she needed help in being Rachel. But then I realized that while she did pretend to be Rachel, she didn't pretend to be Rachel in front of someone who knew Rachel.
It was in front of somebody that she kind of also already knew and had something to. This is a totally new guy. This is James Frame playing, was it Ferdinand or Fernando? Because when he came on, I started hearing ABBA. So that's why I keep leaning towards Fernando. And now that song is stuck in my head all day. It's been stuck in my head. James Frayne, who I love because he can play a really good guy. I felt so bad for him at the end of the season of 24 that he was on. And then he can play a really bad guy. And he can play a good guy that does bad things or a bad guy that does good things. He was really good for this part. I really liked him. Yeah. And his interactions with Tatiana, I loved.
Oh, yeah. This is what I expect from guest stars who come on this show, to have this amount of chemistry and to play off of what Tatiana gives them brilliantly. And I know it takes a certain kind of actor and a really talented one to take it all in and give as good as he gets. And he didn't disappoint. When I first saw him, I was so thrilled because he pretty much is like Mark Shepherd for me. He's in all the things. Yeah. He's in all the things.
He is.
I kept seeing him in all those shows that I watched. And when he came on Orphan Black, I knew that this character, oh, even if he shows up only for one episode, it'll be worth it. Mm-hmm. And he delivered beautifully.
I hope we do see him again. I mean, this was a really great way to hide, because we know that we're going to see Marion Bowles again. We know we're going to see her. The wonderful, oh my gosh.
Michelle Forbes.
What's her name?
Come on.
Thank you, Michelle Forbes. Sorry. It's because I'm also thinking about the fact that I also watch The Returned, which is a new A&E show by Carlton Cuse of Lost fame. Oh, she got it in twice in one episode. She's playing a one of The Returned on that show. And I'm watching this going, okay, I know things film at different times and that, you know, now it's not the times way, you know, like 20 years ago when you're on one show, sorry, you can never do any other show, you know, so she can do both. But I'm like, there's got to be times when the schedule's conflicted. And I don't know if they wrote it this way or they knew that Michelle was off doing something else, that Marion is off. And so she can't be there to help cover. She can't be there to help hide. So we have Delphine and now we have Ferdinand Fernando coming in. And if it's Ferdinand, I want to call him Fernando because
let's call him Fernando. It's funnier that way.
We're going to call him Fernando. Delphine obviously has no idea that he knows Rachel anything more than just like this passing business thing.
Yeah.
That whole interaction that she had, I mean, the way that, that Sarah just blurts out that, you know, we need to get Helena. We've got to get Helena because Helena is important to this whole thing. And trying to do it as Rachel and intriguing Fernando, but also Delphine, that look of panic on Delphine's face, like, you know, you can't know about this and let's not go there. But when he pulls Rachel out and talks to her separately, you can tell Delphine is like, I'm panicked, but I can't show panic. What's going on? What's happening between the two of them?
Because I think as much as Delphine is for protecting the clones and protecting Clone Club altogether, mm-hmm. I feel like she shares this one thing with everybody else at Leda, at Diet, and it's not
and
trusting.
Topside.
Yeah, and Topside. And it's not trusting Sarah Manning when she's off to her own, when she's left to her own devices. Because mm-hmm. Sarah has proven over the course of past two seasons that if you leave it up to her, she's going to achieve what she wants, but more than likely, it will leave you completely, you know, screwed over. So well, I understand why Delphine is a little nervous to let Sarah do her own thing.
And last, I really did get a sense last season from Delphine that, you know, the whole thing that she had with Cosima, like, I'm on the Clone Club side, but I'm on your side first, Cosima. And kind of by extension, I always thought it was also, she was first on Delphine's side. She was on her own side and wanted Cosima to be a part of her side.
Yeah.
Like that she really saw it more from that perspective as opposed to from the overall thing. You know, we have her, of course, the stupid thing of we can't let, you know, we're teasing Helsinki this whole time.
Yeah.
We can't let that Sarah know about Helsinki. And she thinks that Rachel doesn't know about Helsinki, but Rachel did know about Helsinki, which of course opens up the door for Sarah to get an idea of what Helsinki is by pulling it out from Fernando there. Real quick, let's delve into the Helsinki thing, because that's really part of this whole thing. We find out that in 2006, there was an incident where they put Leda above the individuals, and we had six more clones that were all taken out within 24, or eradicated. Let's not even say taken out. He used the word eradicated in 24 hours. So we have six more clones that are dead.
Yeah.
From Helsinki. And Sarah now knows.
And you gotta wonder, because Orphan Black writers have been very good at delivering what they tease. And mm-hmm. I you have to wonder whether or not we will learn the details of what actually happened in Helsinki that made them eradicate those six clones. What did the clones do? Did they form a European branch of a clone club? Or something? Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you know,
that's interesting.
Because
I thought of that.
Yeah, it got me spinning all those paranoid, you know, theories as to what happened. Because if they eradicated and then so many clones because of what the clones did, it puts our clones so much more at risk. But if there was a design flaw, like something that people within Diet Helsinki edition did mm-hmm. That affected the clones so much they had to be eradicated. It's just so many theories, so many possibilities that the writers have to give us more. They can't just tease something so huge and then, you know, leave us hanging. So.
Right.
Give me.
Well, in Helsinki is obviously, because that's what, when he had the hitman going out after
Allison, yeah.
Allison. And I like how he spilled that to Sarah without knowing. And I'm saying that in quotes. And I'll tell you why in a second. how he spilled it to her that they were going to go and kill off the entire family. Let's not just kill Allison. Let's kill the kids and Donnie. Which, okay, first off, it's not good, cool to kill kids. Second off, it's not cool to kill our Donnie. Okay?
Yeah. He's
ours. We're protecting our Donnie.
He's ours.
He's our butch. Yeah. He's our butch. So
he's not allowed to do anything that hurts him.
And the hitman, you know, it, what was it, abort Helsinki? So Helsinki is now kind of, I'm almost wondering, is Helsinki the place? Are we talking Helsinki? Or is that kind of almost like a code word for eradicating? Or is it one and the same? You kind of think, well, hey, we got rid of 6 clones in 24 hours. Let's call it Helsinki. That'll be our code word for mass killing of
clones. I'm pretty sure that the incident in Helsinki was probably the first occurrence of a procedure, how they proceeded with the problem, the incident, about fixing it. And now it's, yeah, it's a code word. Because, and I think Sarah, understood it. Because when Delphine interrupted her and Fernando, she did say Helsinki is happening. So now it stopped being a place. It became an event that everybody wants to avoid. Let's not do this again.
Well, we had those teases there in the office about Helsinki, and then we go into when they're back in Rachel's place. And here's where I'm going to say I don't have props for Fernando, because he doesn't like bourbon on the rocks. Sorry, bourbon on rocks is awesome. That little, ew. It was a great way, though, for Sarah to change it, because she doesn't know what his usual is. She doesn't have those clicks back into what their past is. You know, here he says he wants to discuss Helsinki, and she has no idea what that is. You know, she has no idea what that is, and she has no idea what his regular drink is. And she's like, let's do some local color. And how she finally, when she was in the office, I don't think she tapped into Rachel Duncan, but when she is alone in that apartment, it's almost like she really does embody the whole Rachel Duncan atmosphere. Like the whole Paul was my monitor, and him saying, I think he was your bitch. And she goes into, you know, starts really using the sex as a weapon there. That's when she did the same thing with Paul back in season one with Beth Childs, when he was starting to get suspicious and she throws sex into the mix and it just gets him all messed up inside. You could see that with Fernando, because the reason I was saying air quotes earlier is, you remember that scene in the dyad office when they all got into the elevator and Sarah as Rachel is standing in front and he's behind? We have this look to, he looks down to the back of her neck, and it's a long camera shot on the back of her neck.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, was there something on Rachel's neck? Was there a scar, or is he checking for something on her neck? And it made me think that maybe he was suspicious of her, until of course you pulled the sex card and he got all stupid, because he was
like
thinking
boys
with a totally
do
different brain.
Come on, it made for a second that I was, well, of course he gets stupid when she plays into his sexual desires, because, come on, it's like the easiest thing to do for her right now. She doesn't have to know exactly what was the relationship between Rachel and Fernando. As long as she, you know, gets the broad strokes, so to speak.
And she knows Rachel, so I think she knows how Rachel would act. And she saw Rachel with Paul. When her and Helena were, you know, when we had the assassin thing there. So she knows how Rachel acts.
Yeah.
She knows how Rachel dominates. And so when she gets into that whole, you know, do you remember our safe word? No. That's when Sarah really came out, not so much Rachel. But do you think that neck shot, that was there, I can't remember, was there a scar or something on somebody?
I don't
Is there
remember,
some reason?
Because
that was a long shot.
It might not be so much as that he was suspicious of her then, because the way I saw this was the way camera panned over Sarah's neck was more sexual than anything else. I think he was not so much suspicious as giving in to fantasies that he would be later on playing out. Because if anything would make him suspicious of Sarah, was Sarah's behavior alone. The way she was fixated on Helena. And the way she wasn't tapped into Rachel all the time. Because, like you said, she tapped into Rachel, so to speak, sometime in the middle of their encounter. Everything before, it was obvious to me, it was Sarah playing Rachel. So if anything gave him suspicions, it was Sarah's behavior up until she actually got into Rachel's skin and he no longer had any thoughts in his mind. So, yeah.
Do you know when I think she really embraced Rachel, the character of Rachel? I think it was when they were interrogating Sarah, who was Allison playing Sarah. And I love when she's like, holy doodle, here we go. I love seeing Allison having to go so outside of herself and play one of the other clones, you know, especially Sarah, because Sarah is so tough and, you know, the whole oi. And she's trying to, you know, when she's trying to be Sarah, I just love that. Even with, she still does the holy doodle. And I think it's funny when I say I'm looking at Allison playing Sarah and going, ooh, Allison, I really like the makeup and the hair look good on you. I'm like, wait, it's all still Tatiana. Of course it looks good on her. This is her. But when it started going in, when he started getting really creepy with the gloves and started feeling up Sarah Allison.
Yeah.
And Rachel Sarah jumps in and slaps her across the face. I mean, that was a very Rachel moment, I think, you know, letting that anger and rage come out. I think that's when I think he might have been starting to get suspicious of her until that moment. Because that's when he also, you know, really is talking about, we need to discuss Helsinki. That's when he's kind of, you know, now starting to move in. I think that was when his suspicion started to drop. And then, of course, when she pulled his belt off later on.
Yeah.
Suspicions? What suspicions?
Yeah, we will come back to those suspicions later on. Now we're busy. Seriously.
And then we had Delphine coming to his rescue right there at the end. You know, saving him from, I don't know, would Sarah have really taken him out?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I mean, yeah. He proved to her that he wouldn't be much help in finding Helena. Because he wasn't interested in finding Helena. He was interested in, you know, eradicating the clone club. So I'm pretty sure she would if Delphine didn't come in when she did, Sarah would not let go.
So we have Delphine coming to the rescue, but and Sarah sees that and knows that, even though she doesn't like that, you know, don't try anything else. It's like, yeah, sure, Delphine. That's that's like when Mrs. S is like, you know, don't let her do anything foolish. But the side of Delphine that we don't see is that side with the real Rachel. Nobody else has seen this. Okay, I need to talk about this section here. So first off, ugh, really close up of the surgery and taking the pencil out was just gross. But it did have me flashing over to iZombie because I'm like, huh, if Liv Moore was over here, she'd like that pencil, please. That's, have a little brain matter on it. So we have Rachel in this coma, basically, mini or just out with the thing. And then when Delphine wakes her up, we start having her having those problems of speaking. It's affected her brain, where Sarah has hit her. Delphine wants her answers, you know, and doing her thumb into the eye socket. This is a new Delphine.
Oh, yeah. And come on, it's not a new Delphine, but it's the first time we're allowed to see it. Because nobody develops this kind of determination overnight. Mm-hmm. It had to be somewhere inside of Delphine. But to see it, I was shocked, because what we've seen of Delphine is, you know, this fluffy, shiny romance and all this cute pretty things, you know, sunshine, rainbows, and oh my god, my lover is dying. But this ruthlessness, when she told Rachel, I'm you. Oh, I believed her. Really? If I wasn't sitting when I was watching it, I would take a step back. Because the more distance there is between me and Delphine right now, the better. But I love this turn of her, this turn they took her, the path. I thought that we wouldn't see Delphine for a long time in season 3, after she got, you know, reassigned to Frankfurt. But I love where they are taking her. And I keep
I think she went to Frankfurt long enough for, you know, a couple beers and some brats. And then they're like, yeah, come on back.
Yeah, because that road she's on, first of all, I'm pretty sure it's a road where she cannot come back from. Wherever she goes, there is no coming back for her. Mm-hmm. And second, I like her because it gave her this oomph that I didn't see before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had been very much the, like, lovesick puppy.
Yes.
A little French, lovesick French poodle. Yes. That had an incredible scientific brain, but she, you know, just following Cosima along and whatever, Cosima. Now she's in a position and where that scene with her and Cosima, when Delphine comes to see her, and Cosima is very much like, well, hi, can we talk? And like, oh, I love you. You're my girlfriend. And Delphine is like, look, I'm still on Clone Club's side, but to be on Clone Club's side, I can't be with you anymore. And you can tell it's hurting her, but I don't believe that it's that far from who she is. Like, I believe it really does hurt her that she has to now put an end to her and Cosima. I don't believe that this is a foreign thing for her to be this Rachel Duncan corporate uber bitch.
Yeah.
You know, I think this had a lot more of who she really was there. And that, I think, is what also really broke Cosima's heart.
But I, while I might not agree with the choices Delphine is making in this episode, I have to say they do look like she've made them before. She isn't making those choices the first time. Okay. That's the right. vibe that I've been getting. I really do feel like she gave up love before. She was ruthless and desperate before, because the Delphine I saw in this episode wasn't Delphine who was feeling her way through an unfamiliar situation.
Oh, no.
It was like she knew what she had to do in order to get what she wanted, to get where she wanted to be. First of all, she needs to give up the weakness that she had in Cosima. Then she needs to get information, no matter, you know, the means. She just needs those information, and if she has to torture Rachel for it, well, she didn't like Rachel in the first place, so sure, I'll stick my thumb into the eye socket. And I don't know. I'm usually against flashbacks, but I would love to know more about how Delphine, you know, got to where she is now.
I think we need to have her meet somebody else from her past. Maybe not flashback, but have her past come up and confront her right in the face. 'Cause you're right, she's very much, she went from this hippie love, I'm a French hippie love scientist, to one trip to Frankfurt. Okay, maybe she didn't go for beer and brats. Maybe she went shopping and got the new clothes and the new hair.
And the new world domination boots.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I feel that she has this great moral code that is her own, because she does say, you know, to keep my promise to love all the sisters, I can't be in this relationship. So here's my promise. You made my overall promise be to look out for the sisters and to love all the sisters.
Yeah.
To do that, I can't love one. So she has her own moral code. It's easy for her, I think, to go to it and justify it while it's still hurting all these other people. And I think it's going to be great, because I think she will be on the side of the sisters as a whole, but not in the way the sisters need her to be. and not in a way that's necessarily going to be beneficial to everybody. And I don't know if sisters are going to trump, if Kira's going to trump, if Kira's part of that, if science is going to be this, because she loves science. Is science going to be this carrot that dangles and she's going to kind of get sucked into the whole world as well? You know, that I need to know more about the science? I don't know.
Another thing that's interesting about Delphine in this episode and the way they might take her this season is that now that Mrs. S is being, you know, thrown out of the loop and out of the Clone Club, I wonder if Delphine is going to be the one who takes on this mantle of being morally ambiguous with this secret hidden agenda we're not privy to. Because that was pretty much Mrs. S's role in season 2 and part of season 1. That we didn't know exactly where she stood and what were her plans, but she was still a part of the Clone Club because Sarah and Fee included her in. But now she's out and Delphine is in this position of power and she's not officially out of the Clone Club, right? So I wonder if she's going to be Miss S of season 3 with information she doesn't exactly share but has, and those agendas that technically align with the agendas of the Clone Club and Michelle Forbes, Marianne, but having her own spin to those agendas. It's all very interesting, and I'm getting excited about Delphine, and I've never expected to be excited about Delphine.
I think she's definitely, I don't know if she's going to be as quote-unquote included as Mrs. S was last year, but I think she's definitely going to be the one that they begrudgingly know they have to include, because she's the dyad connection. She's the connection to the power. Yeah. And I think that's the way they think they're going to be able to get to Helena. Because, you know, I think the caster and military and Paul aspect is not a way that they're going to be able to exploit. That's going to be who they're fighting against in some way, shape, or form. So it's like, it's kind of almost like the enemy of my enemy. I think that's what Delphine's going to be. But yeah, she definitely has secrets, because the way she's talking about this, Helsinki was not new to her.
Yeah.
Helsinki wasn't this, oh my God, what happened? And that makes me think she knew about that last season and maybe even the season before. She knew what happened with these other clones.
Yeah.
And didn't bat an eye. She was a monitor who got sucked in by her love for Cosima and then saw this side of it and now is leaning towards that side, but she's still on her side and she still has more secrets that she knows. And what I love is the juxtaposition between her and her knowing, like when she showed Allison, first episode, I'm already getting my clones mixed up. When she showed Sarah that video of the caster clones with Clone Crystal, another clone that we found out. We're not stopping at 10 clones. We have a lot of clones that are out there. She was just very matter of fact about it and kind of worried about the caster side. We have on the opposite end, Cosima now she severed that tie with Delphine.
Yeah.
Cause awesome. You're the new Rachel. Wonderful. So she pulls it cause Scott is going to come and take her blood work and do all this. Scott comes in. I love his lines, you know, like with the soldier clones running around and all the lesbian drama. I don't know if I can keep working on all this super secret stuff. We're PG-13 podcast, so I can't do his full quote. And then Cosima knows how she can pull him back in with that book. Cosima is ready. She's like, okay, Delphine and I are done. I need you, Scott. I need some science-y people because, yeah, Kira's great. Even though Kira's going and grabbing a big thing of nitrogen, I don't know why she's got this canister of nitrogen. I don't know that you should have that in a
child's
hand.
Don't you remember it?
Unless she's going to go into like molecular gastronomy or something. I really don't know why.
Don't you remember the canister? Heather, this is the canister with Helena's eggs, I suppose.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think you really need that with, I don't know, I want Kira around this. What is she doing with this?
I'm pretty sure she found it. And that and then took it and placed it somewhere else because she knows it's Helena's. And that's all. Yeah, okay. There's no big conspiracy.
It's Helena's little monkeys.
Yeah.
Okay. But she knows, but Cosima's not going to be able to do sciencey stuff, even though, you know, Kira won science. She's not going to be able to go to Kira for help with science stuff. And she's obviously not going to be able to go to the other sisters here or Fee.
Yeah.
She pulls Scott in there with this book. And I love that she's actually learning a little bit from Delphine, I think, because until we decipher what his notes were, no one else is going to know about this book. Not even her sisters. And I don't know if that's, she's learned from Delphine, if she's trying to protect them, if she's trying to make sure they don't accidentally spill it, or like what you don't know can't hurt you, this plausible deniability, so that if Sarah or Allison or anybody else gets caught, they can't say that they, because they honestly don't know. I don't know what Cosima's game is, but I'm intrigued.
I am too. And at the same time, I think she's doing the right thing. Because right now in the Clone Club, Sarah is calling all the shots. Sarah is calling the place. And as long as they don't know what the book contains, I don't think it's wise to give Sarah something she can use as a leverage, as a trading chip.
That's true.
In her, you know, place. In her, because right now they don't know what the book contains. It may contain the key, it may not, but unless you tell Sarah, this is this thing we need, we, the Clone Club, need to do this thing, she would be willing to give it up for something she needs, Helena, whatever, because that's how Sarah operates, unless you give her, you know, a direct connection. As to why she can't use it as a trading chip, she will to achieve her goal.
Well, and that's what because she's already proven that. When she was ready to sign over, it wasn't the rights, but to Rachel initially, she was ready to sign that document.
Yeah.
So that she could get on with her life. And then when Cosima goes, don't do that, because there's a patent, a copyright in there. In our DNA, so don't do that. This is bad. And that's when Sarah's like, okay, now I have a reason not to. Bye-bye. So yeah, with Sarah, that I think it is definite.
Yeah, so a definite plus. I think Cosima's on the right track. Let's keep it hidden until we know whether or not we can give it up for something else we want.
Yeah, and know exactly what it is. It's exactly. Like, let's not give it up before we know what it is. You know, let's not give away what could potentially be the keystone of everything until we know exactly what it is.
Yeah. So props to Cosima. Whoever she learned it from, she learned it right, and she's doing what I think will ultimately benefit the entire Congress.
And what I love too is she's still very sciencey, very smart. She still has this heart. I mean, you can see how heartbroken she was when her and Cosima basically break up. You can see this connection with her sisters. She's not letting any of that distract her from this very logical thing that she needs to know. It's like, I need to look at this big picture because everybody else is being ruled by emotions and various things. Somebody needs to be looking at the big picture.
Yeah.
And I like that she's doing that, because we do have now, we were going to kind of talk about Allison in the mix, and it didn't really work out totally. We've got to talk just a little bit about Allison and some of the things that were happening with her oafish sticks. And I just love her. The lines that they give her as she's trying not to. She does all these horrendous things, but, you know, her language, you have to be so careful. so careful. We have them setting up some very day-to-day stuff with Allison. And I like the fact that the writers are doing this, that it's not just all this ultimate high stakes, you know, spy stuff and adventure. You know, it's not all about the big stuff. We have these daily life things. Donnie finally quits and does it is fired in such a huge way. He loses his Taurus. Poor guy. He's got his box of stuff. They've got to figure out what's going on. Allison is getting upset with Marcy because Marcy is going to be doing things that could make her kids have to change schools. And you see them when Allison and Donnie are running the numbers. Did you like that line when they're trying to figure out money? And Donnie's like, well, I still have expenses from when I was a monitor.
The one thing I love about Allison is that she's the, right now, she's the only clone with a life outside of Clone Club. Because from the start, Sarah's life got taken over by Clone Club. Everything she is about is Clone Club. Then when Cosima started, she was still having her life, you know, studying at her university, being sciencey. But then as the time progressed, she seemed to lose all that and also became all about Clone Club, right? At some point, I'm pretty sure she got, well, either took a sabbatical at the university or dropped out, because right now she's not attending classes. She's being sick and, you know, being all about the brains of the Clone Club. Helena never had a life. Rachel was always about the clones as well. And Allison was the only one who held on to her life, because she has her husband, she has her kids, she has her suburban life that she holds on to. And while we do treat Allison, and the writers and the viewers get Allison as something of a comic relief, she is the only one juggling it all. The Clone Club, the spy stuff, the killer stuff, and the freezer stuff. With, you know, being a soccer mom and trainer and taking care of the, you know, kids, and now possibly running for a position. So that's, I like her, and it shows how, even though she's a little neurotic, she keeps her ambitions out of the Clone Club. She has her life, and it's going to stay that way. And she's taking Marcy down.
Yeah, I love that. You know, how she has her bee in her bonnet about her, and then her and Donnie coming. I love her and Donnie coming together ever since the whole Leaky thing.
Yeah.
They are such a great unit, which I think some people are just like, you know, that this is a distraction. Like you said, I think it's great because it adds a normalcy to this whole group. It's not just all this super secret spy stuff. It's not just all this, you know, Mission Impossible-y type thing that's always going on. Here we have real life things. She's coaching soccer. She's driving the bus, literally. Literally driving the bus. She's doing her exercise. She has all of her crafting stuff there. You know, she's trying to figure out the finances. I mean, I love that, watching them actually sit down and trying to figure out their finances, because that's actually a complaint I have with a lot of TV shows, is that they forget the day-to-day stuff. That, yeah, you have all these things here, but there's stuff that happens in your life that you do have to deal with and you do have to take care of. And while everybody else is off running around doing clone stuff, she has two kids to raise. We're not forgetting that she has two kids, that she has a house that has a mortgage, and that they have to do all these things. And there's a certain life that she wants for her and for Donnie and for the kids, and that she's trying to get back to. While everybody wants to get to a life, Sarah wants a life with Kira and Fee.
Yeah.
And Helena wants a life with Jesse and her babies, and everybody wants their life. Allison's the one that, like you said, she has a life, and she's got to protect that. And protecting that does not mean abandoning things, including running for the school council or you know, whatever the district is. And I love the, we're going to see this whole thing. She's going to take Marcy down. Marcy has to go. And her and Donnie are doing this as a team for the kids, to make sure the kids stay in school. That's the whole reason they're doing it, is for the kids.
Did you get the same feeling as I did? That, yeah, it's for the kids, but ever since they got rid of Leaky, they need that adrenaline. Like, taking down Marcy is not going to be the same as killing Leaky and getting rid of the body, but it's going to provide them with that adrenaline they now think they need to keep their relationship, you know, lively and interesting. Because when they said, for the kids, yeah, for the kids, I was thinking, yeah, right, for the kids, you little adrenaline junkies.
Yeah, I agree. I actually really love it. I don't want to say that Allison provides comic relief. I think she provides relief, that breath from
fresh air, yeah.
All the intrigue and stuff. Yeah, it gives you that chance to breathe and go, oh, wait, this is supposed to be happening to real people who just happen to be clones. I think they're really integral to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that's really integral to the plot this season, we're going to finish up here really briefly with the new clones in town, all of our caster guys. I'm going to say one thing about Ari Melin. Yeah, nice butt, because when he was Scarface clone doing the whole chin-ups and naked Buddha.
Oh, yeah, I noticed
nice
him.
Butt, Ari.
Mm-hmm. I noticed
that, him. That made me briefly forget how creepy and dastardly and skeevy all the rest of your clone actions are. I have to say that between Scarface and Juan and our soldier guy, they're all making Prolethean Mark seem really nice and happy and somebody you want to invite over for dinner so far.
I know!
These guys are creepy.
We've spent the entire season 2 referring to Caster Clone Mark as the creepy Prolethean guy. And now suddenly he looks like the normal one? Their goal was to establish how different the caster clones are from what we got used to with Mark. But by doing that, I don't know, I didn't really feel like they established themselves as separate units with their own personalities, quirks. Because in the pilot of season 1, it didn't take long for us to see the differences. And it wasn't even physical differences between all the Tatiana's roles. Every single clone had its own thing. It was the accent or the behavior or the mannerisms. Each of them was a separate unit from the start. And right now, it's the creepy Prolethean guy who I guess I can start calling Mark if I have to. and then all the other creepy ones. And I don't know if it's intentional to make them all creepy, but I feel like we could use an actual separate unit. Somebody who not only looks different, he can look creepy like everybody else. But I think the actor himself could really use a character who is like a complete opposite of everything he played so far. Because I do believe that they wouldn't cast him if he didn't have a range, at least in the same area as Tatiana. Because Tatiana blows everybody away. And
well, yeah, I already forgot which clone I was talking about earlier because she's so great. I'm getting my clones mixed up. And
so it's natural that we have to compare him to Tatiana. And in that comparison, he will never get out on top. He will never win. But I refuse to believe that the writers and producers who gave us Tatiana in season 1 and season 2 would cast a guy who doesn't have a range at least as wide as Tatiana's. But I'm not seeing it so far, which is a big letdown.
Well, I think what they need to do, though, is the idea of the caster clones was just brought up, really, in the season finale last year. And I think what they need to do is show how different Caster is from Lita. That all the Lita clones, all the women, and I hate saying that because we have Tony. So all the Lita clones are so different in everything about themselves. Their, you know, what their likes, their dislikes, their mannerisms, their orientation, their whatever. All of them are such individuals that I think the writers are trying to show what we kind of almost think of as clones, where clones are identical to each other, that they all have the similar traits. So I think initially we're starting, I hope that we do go, like you were saying, that they start having some differentiation. Mm. But I think for this episode, and maybe the next couple as well, we need to show it as this big evil that is Castor, this big baddie, this, you know, that there isn't somebody that we can trust. There isn't somebody we can relate to, which I think would make when we do get somebody, I think we have to, like you said, Ari Mullen has to have been cast because he can at least hold his own against Tatiana.
Exactly.
I don't think he's ever going to surpass her, but he's got to be able to hold his own in this whole clone type thing. I think that'll make the nice clone a good clone, or whatever Mark, because, yeah, Prolethean, creepy Prolethean Mark might end up actually being the nice one. He's the one that's married and in love with Grace, or Gracie. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was Grace or Gracie.
Gracie.
And is, yeah, and is, you know, protecting her, or we hope. So maybe we will have that range, but they're right now, they are really this big, I mean, they could go off at any time. That's what I love. Like, I think Paul and all of them are so, this is how they operate. This is how Dyad and Topside and the military are going to all operate. And the whole Castor clones, they're just all, they're bombs that could go off at any moment. Yeah. You look at him wrong,
I think,
and something could happen.
I think in a way, Tatiana has spoiled me. Because no matter who we're watching, we can always tell which clone she is. Even if it's Sarah pretending to be Rachel, or Allison pretending to be Sarah pretending to be Cosima. Something, you know? You can always tell which clone it is doing all those pretending. And I think, because right now, through the entire podcast, we've been referring to the Castor clone, with the exception of creepy Prolethean Mark, as the Scarface, the soldier boy, the pornstache, as I've been thinking about Juan, the pornstache guy. Because if you take one and put him in the clothes of the other, I would not be able to tell you who I'm seeing. And yes, it's the premise of the clones. But I've been spoiled by Tatiana that I've been able to differentiate between the leader clones. Always. Even if, when she's pretending to be somebody, pretending to be somebody else. That now right. that the Castor clones all kind of mesh together and blend together into this one big mass of the clones. I'm kind of, you know, disappointed. I'm missing something. I know that I can get, and I'm not getting
it's
it now.
It's the first episode.
The late gratification isn't really my thing. I want things now.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true, yeah. I say, I like the idea that it's this one big ominous thing right now. That it's this one big brotherhood, and it's all bros before Lita kind of thing. And
how bros before Lita, I'm sorry.
With Juan coming down there and just blowing that guy away in the back of his head to release Scarface. So now we have Scarface and Juan out there on their own. And all. I like that it's bros before Lita for them. And it's sisters above all else for Sarah. So, okay, we're going kind of long here on this one, which I think is understandable because, oh my God, Orphan Black is back.
Yay!
And it's our anniversary podcast.
Yes.
We missed that. We love the other shows we're podcasting about, but for the most part. But we missed Orphan Black. Let's go ahead and move into what was our regular segment last year with the Clone Queen and backup. First off, a note, and Alex and I did a long discussion on this. We want to say that we have Clone Queen, and that is always going to be Tatiana. It cannot be any other clone besides one played by Tatiana.
Exactly.
The Castor clones could maybe, if they start differentiating themselves, because like Alex was saying, it's kind of one big ball right now of evil Castor-ness. Maybe if they differentiate themselves, we'll have a clone prince. But for right now, all the Castor clones could possibly be up for is best backup.
Yeah, they need to earn their royal status, what we're saying, basically.
Yeah, exactly. They're still bastards.
Yeah.
Which, that wasn't me calling them a name. That's like the whole royal thing. They're not part of the royal lineage if you can't. You can't be part of the royal family.
Yeah, they need to earn
this. You're a bastard, so.
They earned
that. I'm using that in the traditional sense of the word there. So let's go ahead and pick our favorites this week. We're going to start with Clone Queen.
Three cheers for Her Majesty the Queen! Hip hip! Hip hip! Hip hip!
Okay, Alex, since this is our first anniversary, I want to let you have the first pick. Who is your Clone Queen for this episode?
Well, you remember, like, in season 2, I was always on the fence between one clone or the other. This episode, I did not have this problem. It was Sarah all the way. She was truly in control. She was the star of this episode. And I finally liked where she was going. I was always complaining in season 2 that, yeah, Sarah, think about your life. Think about your choices. Well, I approve of her life and her choices in this episode. And therefore, she is my clone queen of episode 301.
We're starting off our first anniversary in a very odd place because I agree 100%. Last season, we kept talking about how it's funny how we can actually say last season for our podcast. Last season, we kept talking about, this is a new territory for us people. We kept talking about how it's funny that this show is really Sarah's show. She is the main protagonist. And yet we were never naming her Clone Queen. Never. She's like, no. She's moving the story along, but you know, she's not the Clone Queen. I couldn't agree more. This was Sarah shining just so brightly and brilliantly and moving forward. She moved the plot forward, but she also did it in a way that moved her forward.
Yes.
And really made her shine. So I can't agree more that this was such a fabulous Sarah episode. This went back to how I felt about Sarah in season 1 before we were podcasting. Yeah. I'm like, I am so on Sarah's side and I'm just really excited. It wasn't all just Kira, 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 which is what it was last season.
Mm.
It was everybody. It's me and my sisters, which of course includes Fee. So Sarah all the way. She is our queen. Yay!
She is.
Now let's move on.
I just need you to be my backup, okay?
I don't do backup. I don't even know what backup is.
Alex, who was your backup for this episode?
I'm pretty sure you and everybody else can already tell by the way I couldn't shut up during the podcast about Delphine, because she is my backup for this episode. I was so surprised and stunned and impressed with what she was doing, with where the writers were taking Delphine, that I cannot give this trophy to anyone else in this episode, even though this episode was really strong for a number of characters, for a number of supporting characters. But Delphine just took that trophy at the beginning of the episode, and she just didn't give it back to anyone else. She was so badass. No questions asked. Delphine is my backup of the episode.
Wow, we're really starting off our second season in unfamiliar territory, because I agree too. So we are like on the same page both. Delphine, somebody who was like, well, she was a nice character last season. She had
but some
she
nice was a puppy,
moments.
Like you said.
She stole it. I mean, it was this battle for me between her and Sarah. That if I really look back on this episode, it's Sarah and Delphine. And everybody else is just part of the Sarah and Delphine stories.
Yeah.
They were fabulous. And she really proved that she deserves to be an opening credit, that she deserves to be one of those characters.
Yes.
One of those actors that's up there, because she's differentiated herself. She's grown from what she was last year. I still believe everything that she said last year, but I believe she's really taken this incredible turn and embraced this other side. So Delphine it is. Our clone queen is Sarah, and her backup is Delphine, although I don't know that Delphine's really backing up Sarah, but
I feel like we need to put a disclaimer up for all the listeners so they don't get used to it, because we don't really agree all that much when it comes to awarding Clone Queen and backup of the episode. But this is clearly because of it's the anniversary, because of our anniversary, and because of...
It's an anniversary high.
This is the one time when we actually 100% agree. Yay!
Okay, well, that we'll see how many times, we'll keep a tally, see how many times that happens the rest of the season. We want to know who your clone queen and backup were for this episode as well. So you can email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. You can give us a call on the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCIFI. We'd really love it if you would share it on our Twitter, @scififorchicks, because I think that would be a great way to get out to everybody. Let's see who everybody thinks is the clone queen and backup for each episode. Also go over to scififorme.com and like and follow all sorts of things over there, including Alex, because she is starting some Outlander reviews for the second half of season one. Everybody keeps calling it season two.
No, it's not. It's like second half of season one. I'm sorry. I feel very strongly about stuff.
Definitely go over there and check that out. Alex, we will be back. Well, you and I will be back soon to talk about the next episode of iZombie, but we will be back next week to talk more Orphan Black for season 3, episode 2, with the title I Don't Know Yet, and Alex is glad about that because that means that I'm not going in yet diving into where the title came from. It'd be interesting to see where it is, because I understood Darwin and I understood Sir Francis Bacon, but Eisenhower? I don't think we're going to keep doing Eisenhower quotes, are we? Okay, so I'm interested to see where we're going to go with that. Thank you so much, Alex, and happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you, too.
We deserve cake.
Yes.
And a drink. Wine. Okay, I'm going to go have cake.
Me, too. I have cake.
Thanks a lot, listeners. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is a fight for knowledge. This is war.
Adios to Najbi.
Those with power do not give it up easily.
They never have.
And they never will.
I am not your weapon.
I am not your toy.
I am not your experiment.
I'm not your property.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.